You heard that there on the news, and I just want to absolutely clarify again for people, because I think some people were freaking out there. Martin Coyne did say it at the time, just to reiterate, you have to self-isolate for 14 days if you were tested because you were a close contact of somebody who tested positive. That's when you have to self-isolate for 14 days. If you were tested because you had a temperature or another symptom, you don't have to self-isolate for 14 days after that, okay? So just so that everybody is on the same page with that one. Jack, a UCD student, has texted in on 51551. Give COVID a break, please. We get the message. No wonder there's mental health issues with presenters talking non-stop about COVID. Lighten up. And you know what, Jack, you're right. We have all become absolutely obsessed, and it's ridiculous. But just when you think it's going away, it comes back again. You have to go on about it again. So look, I'll tell you what, we're going to lighten up now. And some of you will know my next guest very well. And for those who don't, he's a huge social media star. You've heard of you've seen the Rory Stories videos. Some of them get up to 10 million views. And he's known for their kind of funny videos about the GAA and then kind of everyday life. And he's been doing some great ones at the moment during COVID. But he's also just written an autobiography, and that shows another whole other side to him as well. Rory O'Connor, you're very welcome.
Cheers, Brendan. Thanks for having me.
So you have been doing the Rory Stories videos. It kind of started out centred around GAA life, I suppose. Then it was kind of everyday life. But you've been on a great roll during all the COVID and lockdowns and everything else, exploring the little dilemmas in that.
Yeah, like, I suppose lockdown has been crazy, like, for everyone. But for me, like, just with my own brand and content, like, I've worked harder than I probably ever have with content, just because I feel it's important to give people a laugh. As you were just saying with the last text in, like, it's tough times for everyone, but everyone needs to laugh and look at the lighter side of life. And, you know, I never really set out to be doing so much COVID content, but back in March, I started to do 1, 2, and before I knew it, I was doing them on a daily basis, and the feedback was just incredible by the public saying, oh, Rory, keep going, and I kind of felt it, to be honest, a bit of a duty, like, you know, by trade, I'm a comedian to make people laugh. The doctors in ICU are working very hard. Everyone is working hard in their own profession, and my job is to give people a bit of crack, and that's what I kind of put a bit of pressure on myself to do so. But it was also to keep my own head right as well. And my family during lockdown, thinking of ideas and scenarios.
So it's stuff like how to decontaminate the kids when they come in from school.
Like, we had a lot of crack, like, you know, and my little daughter, Ella, she's in them. She's nearly 8. My son, Zach, who's actually 2 today. Happy birthday to Zach at home there. They were all involved in them, like, and so was my dad, so was my mother. Now, would there be in a video, but she'd record them first, you know. But it was a real family affair, but we enjoyed the crack, like, you know.
Yeah. Now, you've written 2 books before, but they were kind of comedy books. This is quite different. It's an autobiography, and it is very, very, very honest, and details, like, you've had your struggles, like everybody. But I suppose, ultimately, just to jump to the end of the story first, is that you then found something which you were good at and which kind of gave you purpose. But it's very much, you say, like, it's simple comedy, you call it.
Yeah, simple comedy. Like, I don't claim to be, like, an intellectual genius at punchlines and scripts, like, and I don't claim to be. But what I have learned is that, like, and stats don't lie, Irish people enjoy simple comedy. And, you know, you go back, obviously, Father Ted and all these kind of stuff, you don't have to be a genius to get the joke. And as Brendan O'Carroll, who I would have looked up to, often says, like, his audience even sees the joke coming, but that's what they enjoy. And that's Rory Stories is very similar comedy, you know, and that's what I find that people enjoy, is just a very simple little observational comedy. And that's, like, there's no point in trying to change it. That's what people enjoy, and I enjoy making it, you know.
Yeah, okay. So, anyway, we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
To go back to the start then. As a kid in school in Ashbourne, you always kind of in trouble and spent a lot of time out of class and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. So school for me, which I go in depth and more, was like a jail sentence, is the first part of one of the chapter. Like, it felt like that to me. I just didn't fit in school. I'd be very hyperactive kind of a fella, a lot of energy in me. And for me to sit down and be taught something that I'm not enjoying, it just wasn't for me. And my attention span would be poor, and I wouldn't be great at kind of reading and and writing and stuff like that. And I just have, I remember being in school and teacher writing the blackboard, and they'd often ask, is everyone in the class up to date so they could rub out and start again fresh? And I was never anywhere near where they would be, and I'd never put my hand up because I didn't want anyone else to believe I was stupid in the class. So what happens then is you start to distract others around you for them not to think. They'll think, oh, he's just having the crack, but really I was hiding. I just was miles away from where everyone else was. So, unfortunately, I spent a lot of my primary school days outside the door or down in the hall. And that's kind of the way it is. It wasn't primary school in the 80s and 90s in the country. You just get out of class, you're being disruptive. And there was no such thing as SMAs then. We had one.
Were you tested for ADHD?
No, I actually wasn't. Again, like, I do believe I would have. But again, back then, it was just, oh, you're mad, get out. It's not as in-depth as it was now. Yeah. And I feel, you know, God rest him, my next neighbour, Mary Kern, was the only remedial teacher in the whole school. Like, and she had her hands full. So you need to be very, very, very bad to go to Mary. Like, where anyone who was a 7 out of 10 was just left to twiddle the thumbs out in the hall. And like, at the time, you didn't realise. But now, looking back, it has a massive bearing on your confidence and a massive bearing on your own kind of belief in yourself.
Like,
and that's what I learned as I got older is, I just believed, well, I'm stupid, and I accepted that, you know, and but I'm good crack, you know, and but that only, you know, as I said, when I hit my 20s, I realised I can't just get by being good crack, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You got in a lot of trouble as well growing up, like out in the roads and stuff as
well. Yeah, like I grew up in a housing estate, and like there was no badness in, but we would have hung by the corner or the bushes, as we call them, and drank cans and smoked a bit of hash and kind of bit of a bad name. But like, I know all the lads who were there, they all went on to be electricians, you know, engineers. They've all good jobs. Now, we just were just nothing to do, I suppose. And it's the importance of having sport in your life that what I learned when I hit around 14, 15 is getting into sport, getting into a bit of a routine, because otherwise the hanging around and the messing and the mischief, like it's hand in hand, especially when you're in a kind of a town or a housing estate environment, there's not really much to do, you know?
Yeah. So then you left school, you tried an electrical apprenticeship. You say in the book you managed to pass one thing in the apprenticeship. What was it?
Yeah, so I should have known, Brendan, even when we were filling out the FOS forms, I had to ask a buddy of mine how to spell electrician. Like, I should have jumped ship then. And I even remember being in FOS and lads were wiring cookers and immersions, and I didn't know me arse from me elbow, excuse me, French. And I was just going, what is going on here? And then anyway, I knew very quickly I wasn't going to be an electrician, but I enjoyed the crack. And I went back anyway to my manager, Mick Beggy, a good friend of mine. He says, well, Rory, how do you feel you got on in FOS? It's actually a bit of crack. And he says, well, your results are in. There were 8 modules and you passed one. I says, I'm actually happy enough to one, Mick. Which one was that? If you know my mass, it was your attendance, Rory. So, you know, you show up and you get paid. So,
but listen, Rory, they do say showing up is half the battle.
I never was a quitter. Like, you know, I'd give it 100%. So, he said, yeah, well, listen, Rory, that's the end of your electrical days. And that was me and my Mars bar fingers gone away from electrical work anyway.
And then I got a great insight, I must say, into call centres and insurance companies and stuff like that. So you went into an insurance claims job and basically you delete all.
Yeah. So it's something I'm not proud of, but it is what it is. So I got my that job just by pure talking gibberish to a lady about the GEA, and I got the job and no one could believe it. But I went in as a claims handler and very raw when it comes to this. And any email that came in, I just deleted that I didn't understand, which was probably 99% of them, bar, are you going for a bit of lunch, Rory, you know?
Yeah.
So I just had a bit of a reputation, Quinn, for all the reopened claims that people have to take once they see Rory or Connor. Like, oh no, this mess of a claim, like, so
okay, yeah, not funny for the people who are trying to
no,
claim.
No, and I do apologize if anyone's handing them claims.
And then, you know, in terms of when we ring a call center and the call accidentally gets dropped sometimes or whatever, you give us a bit of an insight into
that.
Yeah,
so accidentally is definitely not true. Basically, what people have to remember is in the call centre, you get paid very little money to get abused. And we're human beings. And I've hung up on many a call. If someone's abused me down the phone, I just hang up. And then what you do is you put yourself on engage and you go to the toilet for a few minutes and come back and hope someone else gets that call, you know. But that's why I always say to my father, who'd be getting pure tick on the phone with various calls. I said, Dad, they don't care. Like, don't be getting yourself worked up. Yeah. Don't care, like, so I know it's terrible, like, people, that's why don't get annoyed with these people at call centers, because you like to think you're annoying, man. You know, I know it's not your fault, but, and then I've often just took off my headphone and let them have a rant, and then I understand, sir or ma'am, and then, you know, but listen, it is what it is, like.
And I think the The Lord's point was you ended up working as a debt collector for the ESB, but that was actually on a kind of a serious note. That's where you first got hit with depression, was it?
Yeah, well, that was shocking bad job. Like, that was when I come home from Australia in the middle of the recession, and like it could be. You're 5 minutes into your morning shift and you'd have a lad on the phone. Oh, what are you doing ringing me? And Oscar, I bet you only get paid €8. You should be proud of yourself, won't the call center? I'm like, okay, thanks for the abuse. Hang up the phone, ring another fella. Well, I tell you, if the ESB come near my land, I tell you, I'll take out my shotgun and I'll run them. Okay, no problem. Then you ring another. How could you dare ring me and I only miss my bill by one day? This is disgraceful. And this could be all by 9:15 on a Monday morning. So it was a tough job. But what happened then, Brendan, for me was I was starting to believe that the teachers who told me it amounted to nothing were right. Like, I was in my kind of mid-20s. I started to really get down on myself, but no one knew this, like, you know, because I had football as a distraction. But away from that, I realised, Rory, you're never going to have a proper job, you're never going to have a good car, or because you're just useless at everything you do, like. And this was my inner thoughts, and it did bog me down, I have to say, like.
Yeah, and then you've kind of on and off since had a bit of it. In one way I get from the book, it's bound up sometimes with drink, like. And look, the most mentally healthy person who goes off on one for 2 or 3 days, you're gonna
be
in
a
dark place
after
that. Yeah.
Yeah, so like, I speak on, like, I do enjoy the crack, and I'm a real kind of lad's lad, and I do enjoy the banter, but I also, like, with my mental health, like, obviously alcohol, like, it's just a no-no, but I've often, like, there's been no alcohol in my system. Like, I remember last year in Portugal for a couple of days, I had the black dog, as they call it, and I just wasn't myself, and I didn't really want to be there. And I remember actually having a conversation with myself going, Jesus Christ, would you not come on another occasion? Like, you know, because there's no choice with depression or mental health. It just lands with a switch. And for me, it was them days. So, like, you know, I exercise a hell of a lot to kind of keep them down, but there's just some days, Brendan, where it's just hanging over you, and they're just tough days. But for me, it's just knowing that it does pass, and thankfully it always does, you know.
Yeah. You had an addictive personality, like, you reckon, even as a kid.
Yeah.
Tell us about Ted.
Yeah, so Ted is the legendary teddy bear who my Auntie Catherine bought for me when I was just born in the Rotunda. And this fella is, like, stitched to me, like. So ever since I was born, Rory went nowhere without Ted. Ted was by Rory's side, and Ted's still at home in my new house, pride of place in the bedroom. I remember one year, just to give an example of it, of the addiction to Ted, we went to Manchester. My mother would be a big Coventry Street fan, and my dad brought me around Old Trafford. I was a Man United fan at the time, and I left Ted in Manchester, and I just apparently I broke down seriously, and I wasn't willing to take the risk for him to post Ted over. So my dad, luckily enough, worked in Aer Lingus.
How old did you say you were?
Oh God, I could be about 10 maybe, like, when you take a teddy bear. But I was an old enough chap to have a teddy bear, but me, I wouldn't take the risk of my dad letting the post, like, get lost. So my dad, luckily, again, got a standby flight over to Manchester, got to Teddy and brought him home to me. Yeah, so, and even now, like, you know, my wife was saying about when we were living with my parents about putting Ted into the container, to, you know, I says, yeah, I will not put him in there. He's coming to my mother and father's house. So, like, that's what I learned. I'm addicted to, and I know it sounds funny, and I'd be confident there's other people out there, whether it be a doll, a blanket, or a teddy bear, that just don't want to throw it out. Like, you know, I don't know what it is, but that for me, I felt, was the start of an addiction. Like,
yeah, you say in the book you'd be buried with Ted.
Buried with Ted, yeah.
So then all of that, the mental health, the addictive personality and everything, and it started manifesting in gambling. Now, the thing is, you weren't really gambling huge amounts in one way, but you seem to get into all the bad stuff about gambling, the lying, the kind of hating yourself, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, like, with gambling, like, I was warned by an ex-woman called Anne Newman from Ashburn when we were maybe 16, 17, putting on fivers, that, you know, this will get worse, and even all the friends that I wouldn't know said it to me. So what I was realising was I needed a fix. Like, I needed to constantly have a bet on in order to be kind of a bit upbeat. So say there's a match at the weekend, I'd have to have a bet on, or there's, I'm staying in a Friday night, I'll have to have a few flutters on Dundalk. And it wasn't crazy money, but what I did realise is I was dependent on it, and I needed to kind of have the fix. And I go in depth with the book about, you know, I'd give my girlfriend the rent money or whatever for shopping, but then I'd gladly blow away the rest of my money and have my ham and cheese sandwiches in my call centre instead of a nice chicken fillet roll, you know what I mean? I was willing to gamble that. And what I realised is I was turning to it to try and make myself feel better about having a poor life regarding jobs and that, like, and gambling was kind of my turn to, if you want to call it. And it's a big issue in the country. It's probably the biggest elephant in the room, in my opinion, like, especially with young people, WhatsApp groups. And I was lucky that when I was growing up, like, as I said, there was just, you had to physically go to the bookies, where now these young lads on their phones are just doing it. Now, I started with the online betting just so I was finishing, and that's when I was like, this is bad, like, you know. And I'd often say to myself, right, I'm done now, and I'd not bet. But then they have these cards where I might put €50 on it, and that'd do me for the weekend. But then I'd find myself running down and putting on another 50. And yeah, like, it's, I was lying to my wife, I was lying to my mum and dad, and I just was not a good person, Brendan, to be honest with you. Like, I knew I was on the road to being one of these people that's just a liar, and I didn't want that. I honestly didn't, and I wanted help.
Was there a moment where you kind of accepted, yeah, this is
the, yeah, there was many of them, like, as in, like, where I promise them I'm not betting anymore, and here's the card, and I promise I won't bet. And I could go 6 weeks without, but then again, it filters back in. Oh no, one bet a weekend, I might bet on the football or the golf, and then all of a sudden you get a winner. And with the gambling world, like, it's as if there's this devil nearly over the door saying, come here to me, you owe me money, like, and you need to go back in, and he might give you, there you are, but then I want that back, and you're back in the game again, and it's just a vicious circle, you know. It's a big problem, I believe, at the minute, like.
And then when you got the help, it's an interesting, explain to me about the positive platform. Is that what it is?
Yeah,
is
so I'm a massive believer in this, and I talk about a lot of my talks at the minute. So a man called Jerry Cooney, like, I broke down, it was outside a casino in Dublin, I lost all my money, and the demons really were very strong in my mind, telling me you're useless, and suicide was very strong in my head, I have no problem admitting that. And unfortunately, my first cousin took his own life when I was 16, and that came into my head about the ripple effect of that. And also Shane McInerney, the TD, took his life. I was at his funeral, I know his family well. That came in, and I just said, no, this is not an option. I rang my girlfriend, I got home. Long story short, I met with Jerry Cooney of the Rutland Centre, and he said to me, he said, listen, Rory, you have addictive personality, like, this is the way it is for you. And I start to think of, I'm dependent on my inhaler more than I should be, etc. But he said, you have a positive and negative platform. The negative platform is where you have gambling, drugs, alcohol, everything that human beings have been struggling with from the beginning of time, that's there. That would be there forever. But there's the positive platform where some of the most successful human beings live on. You have your Oprah Winfrey's, your Denzel Washington's, your Cristiano Ronaldo's. You need to find something you're passionate about and fill that void. And straight away, as his mouth was moving, I was thinking, like, I've always wanted to get into comedy. Like, I'm good crack, and I'm a good storyteller, and go for this, Rory. And yeah, I went away, and a few months later, which is on my granddad's daily's anniversary, I wrote Rory's stories on a piece of paper, and I just started throwing stories about myself online, like, terrified, Brendan, terrified of the reaction. And I remember pressing share on Facebook, and my anxiety was blowing out my ears like a kettle over boiling. But people were like, Rory, this is gas. And I was saying, Jesus, I've loads more stories to tell. And before I knew it, Brendan, like, my mind was fully on the positive platform, and I had 100,000 followers in no time. My father, Jesus, Rory, do you know all these people you do? And I was like, no, I don't know all these people. And yeah, that's 2013. That's 7 years ago now. Like, and I haven't stopped working hard, and I'm full-time 4 years with Rory Stories. Like I said, this will be my third book. I've done my country tour. I've been lucky enough to go to Australia, America. My life has literally turned around, and my main message, Brendan, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, is I want other people to realise what can happen when you ask for help to your life. Like, if you can accept you have a problem in your mind and put your hand up and ask for help, you can live your dream. Like, that's really what my message is. And I work every day to be better at my job, to show people that the man who can't spell, the man who's kicked out of school, the man who done LCA is an author, you know what I mean? And that's my message, is that it's possible, but you need to realise that you need help. And that's the number one message that I want to get across, like.
Man, I could talk to you all day. Thank you so much. But yeah. Before you go, you've got a mortgage this year. You've got a house finally.
Yeah. Like, that was the biggest moment. Like, when I went full time, like, you know, it was a scary moment and it took a lot of hard work. But thankfully, and I want to mention McCartney Financial Services, they've done a great job for myself and Emma. And yeah, to have my own home and where I was outside the casino 7 years ago is really a dream come true. So I'm looking forward to getting home and having birthday cake with the little man, Zach, anyway, so yeah.
Excellent. Happy birthday. How old are you now?
I'm 33 myself.
You're 33 and you're going to be a millionaire by?
40.
Okay.
Yeah, by hard working, that's all it is, yeah.
Absolutely. Listen, Rory, it's an extraordinary story. You're a great guy. Happy birthday, Zach. And the book is called Rory's Story. It's published by Gill Books. And listen, the best of luck with it. The best of luck with the new house. New baby on the way as well.
Yeah, new baby in December, so for me sins. But you listen, we'll plow on anyway, yeah.
Okay, look after yourself.
All right, thanks very much.
Thanks a million.
Thank you.
We take a break. Email brendan@rte.ie.